She was warned. She was given an explanation. Nevertheless, she persisted.
Welcome to The Persistence. My name is Beatrice. This is She Who Persisted, the Naughty Podcast, and I'm here with...
Heather.
And Elizabeth.
And since Halloween is coming up, and we're very excited about it, because at Halloween we also get a lot of chocolate, as you know, and we're all about chocolate, we're dedicating the month of October to witches!
Yes! Woo.
Yes, and today we are kicking off our witch month by talking about historical things. So we will talk about the European witch hunts, and we'll give you a bit of historical context before we talk about other aspects of witches and witchcraft. Once a month, at every waning moon, witches worldwide cast a spell on President Trump. I don't know if you know that, but it's pretty amazing. So this spell is supposed to keep him from doing more harm on the world than he already does, on the environment and other humans. And it goes like this. So, listen. A spell to bind Donald Trump and all those who abet him. To be performed at midnight on every waning crescent moon until he is removed from office. The first ritual takes place Friday evening, February 24th, at the stroke of midnight. This binding spell is open source and may be modified to fit your preferred spiritual practice or magical system. The critical elements are the simultaneity, I don't know if I pronounced it correctly, of the working. Midnight EST, DC, Mar-a-Lago and Trump Tower, New York City time. And the mass energy of participants. Components. First of all, you need an unflattering photo of Trump, a small one, a tower tarot card from any deck, a tiny stub of an orange candle that you can get very cheap via Amazon, a pin or a small nail to inscribe the candle, a white candle of any size representing the element of fire, a small bowl of water representing elemental water, a small bowl of salt representing elemental earth, any type of feather representing the element of air, matches or a lighter, an ashtray or a dish of sand, and optional, a piece of pyrite, the fool's gold, sulfur, a black thread for the traditional variant of binding spell, and a baby carrot as a substitute for an orange candle stub.
I wonder if like a Cheeto would work.
I think it would.
Yes. Okay, and it works like this. So take notice, because you're going to need that probably. So write down Donald J. Trump on the orange candle stub with the pin or the nail.
Drumpf would probably work too, though.
Drumpf?
Drumpf, yeah. His lineage's name.
Oh, yeah. Arrange all the other items in a pleasing circle in front of you. Lean the tower card against something so that it's standing up vertically, which is, as I got informed, it's a typical element of binding spells, the tower card. Say a prayer for protection and invoke blessing from your preferred spirit or deity. Reading the 23rd Psalm aloud is common in Hoodoo, root work, conjure traditions. Experienced magicians may perform an appropriate banishing ritual. And the ritual, and I'm just going to say the spell, okay? So the ritual, you have to light a white candle and then say, "Hear me, O spirits of water, earth, fire, and air, and heavenly hosts, demon of the infernal realms, and spirit of the ancestors." Then you light the inscribed orange candle stub. And then you say, "I call upon you to bind Donald J. Trump, so that his malignant works may fail utterly, that he may do no harm to any human soul, nor any tree, animal, rock, stream, or sea. Bind him so that he shall not break our polity, usurp our liberty, or fill our minds with hate, confusion, fear, or despair. And bind, too, all those who enable his wickedness." So Steve Bannon, apparently it already worked on him. And those whose mouth speak his poisonous lies, I beseech thee, spirits, bind all of them, as with chains of iron, with their malicious, bind their malicious tongues, strike down the towers of vanity. Then you have to invert the Tower Tarot card and say, I beseech thee in my name, then you say your full name, in the name of all who walk, crawl, swim, or fly, of all the trees, the forests, streams, deserts, rivers, and sea, in the name of justice and liberty and love and equality and peace, bind them in chains, bind the tongues, bind the works, bind the wickedness. Then light the small photo of Trump from the flame of the orange candlestick and hold it carefully above the ashtray. Then you have to speak loudly the following words with increasing passion as the photo burns to ashes. So mote it be, so mote it be, so mote it be. Then you blow out the orange candle, visualizing Trump blowing apart into dust or ash. I like that image. pinch or snuff out the white candle, ending the ritual. And then afterwards, it's important to ground yourself by having a good hearty laugh, which is what we are doing here, jumping up and down, clapping your hands, stomping your feet, and having a bite to eat. Grounding is very important. Don't neglect it. And remember, he hates people laughing at him. And finally, you burn the orange candlestick or discard it at a crossroads or in running water.
That's awesome.
So that is a ritual binding Trump that you should perform at every waning moon at midnight. And now you know how to do it and can join in the next time. You now know. You have time to, I don't know when the next waning moon is going to be, but...
I'll look that up while you guys keep talking.
Yeah, look it up. Let us know.
Okay, Kate, please look it up. We're going to tell you in a minute. And Heather, unfortunately, is kind of an expert on European witch trials, and she's gonna talk a lot about the historical background.
The fun stuff, right? The really sad.
The fun stuff, yeah. Really the killing and burning people.
Yeah, the killing, yeah. And burning, and yeah, the persecution.
All of the fun things.
Yeah. Well, we're gonna talk about history today, obviously, but before we get too much into the history, I think it's important to say, because we're going to focus on the European witch trials today, you know, witches have been around for a long, long time, long before the European witch trials or witch craze began, as far back as the Code of Hammurabi, which I think is dated to around 1700 BC, and it encapsulated close to 282 laws, if you want to be specific, for ancient Mesopotamia. And witchcraft apparently was pretty relevant back then because the first two laws of the code discuss spells and the subsequent penalties for casting said spells. And I would assume that if you're going to put it in the law code and have it in the first two, that they must have been worried about it. But even before the code, scholars kind of think that witches were more how today we might see healers or manipulators of herbs, who were actually pretty important members of society. It wasn't until the male-centered pantheon started making their way into the forefront of religious beliefs that these women who are the healers and worked with herbs were kind of pushed into the shadows and looked down upon. I want to make sure that we say male-centered pantheons because it wasn't just necessarily Christianity that did it, although certainly Christianity did have a role to play. But I'm talking... polytheistic religions that had strong male deities that came into the area and started pushing back against female deities.
It actually is interesting because you said that already in ancient Mesopotamia witches were known. Mm-hmm. There was an idea of witchcraft and witches, but from the very beginning, apparently there were also penalties for those who were witches and wizards. Yeah. So it's interesting that from the very beginning, people felt this need to control those who were doing magic. You know, that's, I think, a very interesting aspect of it. So where do you think that comes from, that idea that you have to control that?
I'm not sure. I mean, I guess you have to think back to the type of things that they believed in at the time. There were things that were beyond their understanding or control. And so the idea that someone was privy to supernatural influence, maybe. Perhaps there was a drought or a plague came through or something, and they needed someone to blame. And who to blame other than the person who can talk to the dead? That doesn't seem quite right, I guess, would be the thing. Or, I don't know. I think it's kind of inherent to be a little distrustful for someone who can manipulate things that you can't understand. So,
I mean,
and I think even if you're a healer, you know, healers can also do bad, right? I mean, they have the ability to mix together herbs to help people, but just as easily they could mix together a different set of herbs to harm someone.
Absolutely.
Or to harm an entire village. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
That definitely comes into play later.
Yeah. And I also think that, you know, religions were usually, you know, usually all kinds of religions have certain idea of priests or priestesses. So there are certain individuals who had power within that religious system.
Yeah.
And I think to have people outside of the control of that power who also could get in contact with deities or who could like kind of get in contact with spirits and just have some kind of magical abilities is really scary, I think. So maybe, you know, it was necessary to kind of bring them under control for those who are powerful in those systems to ensure their power.
Oh, yes. It's definitely a power struggle, which...
Yeah.
Yeah. But so we know there's a fascination with witches in ancient Greece and Rome, too, which is where I've studied. So those are the ones I'm more familiar with. Not that there aren't witches in other places of the world, but this is the one that these are the ones I know the best. But some are recounted in texts. Others were apparently real. And hired to produce a desired end. So you think love spells or a binding spell or spells against competitors in the arena, things like that. But there's a difference between those type of witches and those who were murdered during the European witch trials in the 14th through 17th centuries, which I think is extremely important to mention. And we'll talk more about like the witch that you might think of when somebody says witch around Halloween is something that we're going to cover in a later podcast when we discuss fairy tales and myths. But as far as the witches that were murdered during the witch trials, that were more than likely not witches, as you would see, we're going to discuss that a little bit today. So, the time period of the European witch trials was just a huge mess. And by mess, I mean that there are so many layers to this that it's mind-boggling. Prior to the witch hunts, witches and witchcraft weren't seen as violent per se, because witches were employable entities. They were kind of called upon to help solve problems in the community. Sometimes they were employed for more sinister reasons, like Elizabeth said, they could, you know, make a spell or use some herbs that might have been for a bad end. But witches themselves weren't necessarily seen as inherently violent or evil, or... really, if they did something particularly horrible, then only that witch would be the one that was not so kind or sinister. It didn't speak to witches and witchcraft in general. And the role of the witch was to perform spells properly so that the supernatural world would react in the appropriate way, because the witch established a desired form of communication with whatever spirit or spirits that she or he was trying to talk to. And as long as the witch took the right steps, the desired end should be met, but... by the time of the witch trials, this whole communication with the supernatural bit for like an ad hoc situation became replaced by accusations of subordination to the devil. And suddenly witches weren't solving problems. They were supposedly adding to them. And they were all now not seen as an individual causing possible issues or helping or whatever. They weren't an individual. Now it was a group. And that group was the personification of evildoers who are out to destroy the moral fabric of society. So a lot of people might say, well, how in the hell did that get to that point? Like, what was the jump? And really, it's because there were so many serious and devastating societal changes happening in Europe as a whole at this time. Changes that I guess they couldn't feel were explained in any other way than through some sort of malevolent force, like witches in league with Satan. You know, we had the Black Death. Certainly, they didn't understand that completely, so that is easy to blame on some sort of other who's wanting to crumble society. There were rivaling Christian sects at this time period, and lo and behold, You probably could have guessed this, but the areas with the worst outbreaks of witch hunts were in areas where rival Christian factions were fighting to impose their beliefs on one another, or in geographic areas where there weren't other, like the local areas were trying to establish their authority over a particular geographic region. Then all of a sudden there were a bunch of witches around, and that made it easier for them to take control of a certain area. But in other words, once the Catholic Church started to lose its unrivaled authority in Europe, the witch craze reached its climax. And, I mean, again, the hunts were such a huge mess. There's evidence that the first trials of accused witches started as early as 1245. But as far as the worst part of the executions, most likely what anyone would think of when you say European witch trials, where tons were killed, were a couple hundred years later. And I think it's kind of important to say now, I took a class, I don't even know how many years ago now, but it was ancient and modern paganisms. And we talked about ancient paganisms and we talked about modern paganisms. But anyway, we studied historical facts and then we read articles that were written today and some of them had opinion in them or were persuaded, like more of a propaganda type thing, not necessarily propaganda, but just their own spin on things. And sometimes you're going to hear that during the burning times, millions of witches were slaughtered. Mm-hmm. And that is just not statistically true. There were not millions of people slaughtered during the witch trials. You think about the amount of people that were alive at that point in time, that would have been a huge drop in the world population, and it's just not possible. So if you ever hear that, that's just, it's not true. We're talking more like thousands, not millions. Not that thousands is excusable, but it's certainly not millions. But anyway, yeah.
So wait, before you keep going, so yeah. This was all prior to the witch hunts in the United States, correct?
Yes, this was all prior to the witch hunts in the United States. Because the witch hunts in the United States, I think, were in the 1600s.
I think that's right.
Yeah, I'm not really sure about that. I think maybe late 1600s.
Yeah, because it was the early settlers prior to the foundation, you know, prior to the revolution.
Yeah, for some reason, I feel like 1692 is sticking in my head, but I'm not sure that that's exactly the right date. But Salem was a lot later.
Yeah.
As a European, I know nothing about witch hunts, witch trials in America. I know nothing about that.
Well, it's interesting. I listened to a lore episode not too long ago. We've been doing a lot of road tripping lately. And so we listened to a lot of lore episodes. And one of them, it talked about, a witch trial that happened in somewhere in New England.
Yeah.
And it was definitely in like the 1600s. But and I'm sure you're going to get to this. But some of it wasn't even necessarily about religion or about getting back at this like woman who had been like tried and not convicted several times of witchcraft. But, you know, people were trying to get land, and this woman, she was on a piece of land, and people wanted that land, and so accused her of being a witch, and she goes away.
Yeah, it was the easiest way of getting rid of her, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think one thing that's also important to say, because we are at the moment we're talking about, the witch hunts in Europe, and I think many people have this misconception that all of this happened during the Middle Ages. And that's not actually true. It started at the end of the Middle Ages. So it was actually the new modern era when it happened, or most of it happened. So I think that's also important.
Yeah, I mean, and a lot of people aren't really even familiar with, like, we call it the early modern period and the late modern, and then the modern period begins with, the Enlightenment in the late 1700s. But this is like the early modern and the late early modern kind of periods where, which like in Italy, we call that the Renaissance period.
Yeah.
But in the rest of Europe, because they didn't have a Renaissance per se, we call it the early modern period. But, it's not the Dark Ages of Europe.
No. And I just thought that that's important to mention before we keep on talking, because for a long time I had that misconception that that was the Middle Ages, because I don't know how this came up, this idea that witches belong to the Middle Ages. I don't know. But it's not true.
Yeah, it's perhaps a little easier to, I mean, maybe it makes a little more sense in someone's mind to think that it would be
the Middle Ages,
a time where they should have didn't know as much as they should have, but that's just not the case.
No.
Realistically, this kind of stuff happens and is happening currently, yeah. but they're just not under the name witch.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, even under the name witch, I mean, there are still people persecuted as witches in other parts of the world. There are many countries in Africa where there are still very strong beliefs in witches and where people are killed because they're accused of witchcraft and accused of, I don't know, crops not growing or children falling ill or whatever, you know. So it still happens this day. It's not something that's just happened in the early modern period at all.
Exactly. Well, for the case of the European witch trials, the real swing of things, where you're thinking the height of murders, trials and persecutions, around 1484, when Pope Innocent recognized the existence of witchcraft as something real and something to be feared.
Pope Innocent, who was not innocent at all. He was not innocent at all.
And witchcraft was something to be persecuted as needed, ultimately giving the Inquisition the green light that they'd kind of been waiting for a little while to hunt down witches at will. Again, it was a power type thing. And until this point, the Catholic Church kind of dismissed the idea of witches as fantasy or something of little consequence. But within 5 years of this official recognition, or I didn't say that properly, the official belief that, that witches were something to be feared. Within 5 years, though, the Malleus Maleficarum was printed.
Yes.
And which I have a copy here for us. Yeah, the drawings and are so interesting.
It's basically two guys who had horrible castration anxieties and needed someone to blame it on.
There you go.
I mean, basically, that's the book.
Well, after this was printed, it wasn't the only book printed, but it was by far the most famous one. And did the most damage. But everyone was in a frenzy, and fighting broke out between Catholics and Protestants. Secular authorities started trying to assert their power within, like I said before, their geographic areas. And that isn't even everything that was happening at the time.
Can I just add one more thing?
Absolutely.
Because maybe people don't know that the Malleus Maleficarum, or the Hammer of the Witches, or the Hexenhammer, it was written by Heinrich Krämer and I think the other guy's name. What's the other guy's name? Jakob Sprenger. Yeah. And it was a manual that kind of explained how to find out who is a witch, it explained the signs of witchcraft, and it also explained how to persecute and kill witches, right?
Yes.
So is this where we get the, like, throw her in the water, if she floats, she's a witch, if she sinks, she's not, but then she's dead anyway, so who cares?
Yep.
Just checking.
And it's two guys who, in the Malleus Maleficarum, it's actually, for every feminist, it's a fascinating read, because it's a book that is full of, and I'm going to talk about this later, like, demonization of women in general, and especially demonization of women who are sexual. And of female sexuality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because there's incubus and succubus.
Yeah, and there's a lot of talk about, you know, witches being responsible for all kinds of sexual dysfunctions, or, you know, like, they are, if you are impotent, it is a witch's fault. If you can't have children, if you're infertile for a reason, it's a witch's fault. Mm-hmm. So basically,
obviously, it's not anyone else's fault but hers.
No, and it's a lot of castration anxiety in one book. Mm-hmm. If you're into that, then read The Hammer of the Witches. It's interesting.
Oh, yeah.
I want to say, though, not only women were killed as witches.
That's correct. There were men. I have a book
here,
too.
There were a lot of men.
Male witches in early modern Europe by Laura Apps and Andrew Gow. We'll put a link to that in the show notes, too. It's interesting. But yes, definitely not just women. It was just a little easier to target women.
Yes.
Especially later on when things get into a frenzy.
And the Malleus Maleficarum focused a lot on women. And so I will talk about that later. Yeah.
Well, and if a male, men were involved, I guess if men were closely related to one of the women accused of witchcraft, that would also not help them.
No.
Even if they were male.
Yeah.
But society was going through a lot of ups and downs here. You had wars and diseases. And because of things like that, those who were previously rich and running local towns were dying, and then new rich people were taking over. Scientific exploration was on the rise. There were threatening theological power as a result of the scientific exploration. Role of women in typical family dynamics were being turned on its head because birth rates were dropping. Because at this point in time, due to the craziness of the economy, women were actually having more room for economic opportunity, which allowed them to wait until marriage or to just not marry at all because they didn't need to. And the role of being a mother then, of course, was shifting. We had contraception on the rise, and apparently infanticide was becoming more commonplace, which certainly didn't make the church at ease.
And there were a lot of pretty well-known trials of women who had, and not witch trials, but just regular trials of women who had murdered their children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So whose fault do you think it was that all of this was happening? Well,
of course, the ladies.
The ladies. It was the witches, of course.
The ladies. Right? Yeah. The nasty women is always the nasty women.
But yeah, there was a fear of witches. Because there was a fear of female sexuality, right? Beatrice, you were saying earlier?
Yeah, so I already talked about how, you know, the Malleus Maleficarum is full of misogyny and gynophobia and fear of female sexuality. And in fact, a scholar named Rowntree argued that not just in Europe, but fear of female sexuality is a feature of witchcraft beliefs worldwide. And interestingly, through history and cultures, you know, the belief in witchcrafts and the fear of witches has been intermingled with the fear of female sexuality. And in Europe, through the early modern period, witches kind of became the epitome of, you know, male castration anxiety. So as I and Heather already said, the Malleus Maleficarum, the Hammer of the Witches, was an important manual for the persecution of witches during the time of the Inquisition in Europe. And witchcraft in it was constructed as a specifically feminine crime or vice, to the extent that if you read the book, it consists of three different parts, but if you like read it, and during while you read it, you kind of notice that witch and woman increasingly become synonymous during the course of the text. And Schimmel Pfennig, who also wrote a lot about the Malleus Maleficarum, writes, I'm going to quote, What begins as a treatise on the witch turns more and more into a polemic pamphlet on the evil nature of women in general. The Malleus Maleficarum proclaims, in summary, that women are credulous, deceptive, and sex-driven creatures who are bound to fall for the temptations of evil. Or more exaggerated, there is the potential of a witch in every woman.
I have to say, though, I like the idea of at least accepting that women have sexuality and that they're interested in sex. Like,
yeah.
Because, you know, we move from that into this really puritanical, like, women aren't allowed to talk about sex, women aren't allowed to be sexual, they're only there for procreation. And we, like, kind of beat the, literally and figuratively, beat this sexuality out of women to the point where, you know, we aren't afraid of them as witches anymore because they have no sexual drives.
Yes, the Malleus Maleficarum does, you know, acknowledge that women can be sexual, but it also vilifies that sexuality.
Well, of course.
So what we find in the Malleus Maleficarum is like this old idea of femininity being intrinsically dichotomous. So we have, on the one hand, the virginal, pure woman, and then on the other we have the evil, dark, like sexual, you know, tantalizing, threatening woman, which is the witch. So, and in a lot of ways, you know, when I talk about witches, it always reminds me of Simone de Beauvoir, who, in The Second Sex, wrote about how women in patriarchal discourses are kind of constructed as the absolute other, and that they, on the one hand, are, that they are never really, that they kind of are, woman kind of becomes a metaphor, you know, it's not a real person, but it like is a projection screen for male fears and anxieties on the one hand, and then we have like ideals and hopes on the other hand. And so that way we get that construction of either the pure woman or the evil woman, you know?
Well, and there's always this connection with women and, like, nature somehow, that women are closer to nature, so they're more unpredictable, and they are, you know, they don't function with their rational mind. It's always, like, you know, only emotion and only very connected, you know, when the winds change and the weather changes, so too do women's emotions change, which is obviously crap, but, you know, that's the discourse.
And I think, you know, a lot of that idea of women being closer to nature, we can also find in the idea that women are being closer to the supernatural, mm-hmm. because those are both intertwined, because women, by being witches, they also kind of modify and manipulate their natural surroundings, you know what I mean? So this is kind of being closer to supernatural things and closer to natural things, both are intertwined in this idea of femininity. But to get back to the idea of witchcraft and sexuality, so Brödel, who also wrote a lot about the Malleus Maleficarum, said that in the course of the book, it kind of becomes obvious that the authors kind of construct witchcraft as a logical and necessary result of women's nature, because they are naturally inferior to men, they're more easily manipulated by the devil, they're deceptive themselves, and all of that jazz.
We are shady as heck,
shady motherfuckers. Mm-hmm. Very nasty we are. So, and then notions of witches and witchcraft serve to reify, in the form of a wholly corrupt female body, the threats and the anxieties posed by human, and I would add particularly female, sexuality. So categorizing witches as embodiments of sinful female sexuality provided the authors with a useful means to control the unbridled sexuality of women that led to misfortune and disaster, unquote. So in short, female sexuality that is not controlled by men is dangerous, it's wicked, it's threatening, it will bring down society. And the concept of witchcraft itself, interestingly, is connected to the idea of unbridled and threatening female sexuality and sexual autonomy from the very beginning, because in many beliefs in witchcraft, it is intercourse with the devil that initiates a woman into witchcraft. Or again, in Brödel's words, quote, "Witches were adulteresses, murderous midwives, and evil mothers. Women defined by the authors as personifications of female sexuality. The witch did not just worship the devil, she slept with him." So the witch was not only a sexual deviant herself, however, she was also blamed for, as I said earlier, causing all kinds of sexual either deviance or diseases or dysfunctions in others. So she was blamed for destroying sexual relationships, for causing impotence, for causing infertility, etc., etc. So the witch was a sexual transgressor who was sometimes accused also of literal castration. And there are several parts of the Malleus Maleficarum where they talk about witches literally stealing penises and collecting penises. And I'm actually going to read a quote from the Hammer of the Witches. It makes a lot of sense. Listen. Quote, "And what then is to be thought of those witches who in this way sometimes collect male organs in great numbers, as many as 20 or 30 members together, and put them in a bird's nest, or shut them up in a box, where they move themselves like living members and eat oats and corn, as has been seen by many and is a matter of common report."
Hold on a second. So these castrated penises are eating oats and corn? Is that what I'm understanding here?
Yes, that's what they say. So, I mean, sure. One question that I have, I mean, if like Kremer and, I again forgot the other guy's name, Kremer and Sprenger were still alive today, I would ask them what they think that woman then, what are you going to do with a box of 30 penises?
I mean,
that you need to feed.
I can think of some things, but
I mean, listen, You could just buy a dildo. You could craft a dildo yourself. It's cheaper than, and it's easier than stealing penises that you have to feed.
Well, what's crazy about that is that there were dildos. I mean, it's not like they have the like sex museum in Berlin has like this huge collection of historical dildos. Now, I will say the Phallological Museum in Iceland also has a huge collection of penises, but that's a whole nother thing.
They're probably also witches. Maybe they're also witches.
They're Icelandic, so.
Yeah, so. Don't trust Icelandic people, guys.
No, so, yeah, for all of our Icelandic listeners, we didn't mean that.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, guys, we don't need your penises. We don't need to collect your penises. We don't need to put them in boxes and feed them. That's not what we need in our lives. So. Nobody's interested in doing that. Nobody. So, yeah, get over yourselves, what I'm saying. Yeah, so, I mean, this is the level of castration anxiety we are dealing with. So I think you have a nice picture now. And in general, I think it was professions that were outside of patriarchal or religious controls, mm-hmm. such as the control of the churches, that, you know, women in those professions were mostly accused of witchcraft, like healers and midwives, because they did things that they healed people. They were like professional women that, you know, were not controlled. They did healing work in a way mm-hmm. that was not approved of by the church. And I think in that context, and it's a lot probably of those... also necessary. Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, a lot of those women were also either not married, they were educated in a certain, you know, in a certain area, and actually some of the only like texts written by women from the early modern period were these kind of texts talking about healing and women's health, and you know, even written by Catholic nuns, mm-hmm. healing and women's health, things that were not in the like purview of men, and so they were thought of as being very kind of transgressive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's also important for especially American listeners to understand, because I come from a Catholic country, and I think the Catholic Church, Catholicism, is even more male dominated than all kinds of, you know, Protestant or, you know, mm-hmm. Denominations. Yeah, thank you. So I think, I mean, because up until this day in the Catholic Church, women are not allowed to be priests. So as a woman, you're not allowed to have any position of power within the Catholic Church. You can be a nun. You can be kind of conserve the church in other ways. You can, for example, one typical thing that women do in the church is clean it. You're allowed to clean the church and you're allowed to do those kinds of things, but you are not allowed to be a priestess or a priest yourself. So something that is it's a male privilege in the Catholic Church. So I think it's also necessary to understand when we talk about witch hunts that, it, you know, most countries in Europe where this happened are like very dominated by the Catholic Church, which is, so I think it's important to keep in mind that we're dealing with an even more male-dominated type of religion than most people who are listening to this are familiar with, maybe.
Well, and even the time period, you know, since we're talking about the early modern period, you know, this is a period where we also start having the division, you know, the Reformation. Martin Luther in Germany in particular has, you know, translated his Bible into German, is breaking from the Catholic Church. But it doesn't mean that Protestantism and Lutheranism in Germany was any like less male dominated during this time period. It's, you know, still very much patriarchy on both sides of the Christian spectrum.
Yes,
during
absolutely.
This time period.
Yeah.
So after the book was published, there was a huge spike in accusations hurled toward women in particular. And I think after what Beatrice explained, it's not surprising. The Malleus Maleficarum apparently was referred to more by secular courts than church courts. The local courts were also far more likely to kill those accused, upwards of like 90% of those accused. and opposed to the national courts, which was the church, actually was only 30%.
So, wait. So 90% of people who were accused of witchcraft died.
In local courts.
In the local area.
Okay. Yeah, okay, now so I got it. Okay, sorry.
Yeah. Not as a whole, but those that were in the local courts, the secular courts, it was more 90%. You know, what I forget which scholar it was that I was reading, but I can find it quickly enough. But they argued that it was a little more common for the churches to kind of turn over those accused of witchcraft so that they would show mercy by turning them over to the secular courts.
That's so disgusting.
Then kind of let the secular courts know, okay, I need you to make sure that you take care of this. Apparently, Venetian courts at one point, and I feel like it was in the 1500s, but I don't quote me on that. Finally, I think it was like 1521 or something, but they said, we're not killing any more people. We're not burning any more witches. It's not happening. And the Pope lost his shit. Like, he was not happy about that at all. So,
well, I have to say this local versus national statistic is really interesting. And I'm going to go back to this lore episode because I found it really fascinating. So they were talking about this witch, and obviously this is in the United States. It's probably in the 1600s at some point.
Yeah.
But she had been acquitted by a court in Boston, mm-hmm. which is, you know, even at the time, a larger area than whatever, like, village she was going back to.
Right.
So she'd been accused, and the court in Boston, which is kind of larger area, acquitted her and sent her, you know, she went back. Mm-hmm. But then in this small village, she was essentially, like, tried and convicted in this, like, more local, smaller-minded area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and it makes, I mean, I don't know all the nuances of the areas in the Northeast when this happened, but, you know, it makes the larger courts seem more merciful, too, as well, which helps also establish a little bit of trust, a little bit more power. See, we can be merciful, and we'll let you local people, make your own decision. It's states' rights. Kind of thing, right? But anyway, Beatrice mentioned midwives as one of the professions that was important. Obviously midwives are important, but also the targets. And I think that it's important to delve into that a little bit. We have midwives and wet nurses were extremely easily susceptible to witchcraft accusations. After all, I mean, if anything went wrong during delivery or after the baby was born, or if the mother suffered from postpartum depression or anxiety, it wasn't long before some woman of a lower social class was blamed for the problem. And how easy is it to blame the one who's right in the room with you most of the time, or with your child? Older women as well were susceptible to being accused. You know, the older neighbor who sometimes talks to herself, maybe she's a little bit grumpy, maybe she even curses under her breath. Yeah, that could be a witch.
I would be dead in a puppy. Like, I would not survive one second in that environment.
Can you imagine people who were on the spectrum in the Middle Ages?
Oh, God.
Good God.
Or anyone.
Or anyone, right?
Or anyone. Can you imagine being anyone? Being any type of woman at that time, can you imagine?
You just have to learn to be silent all the time, is what it would be to survive. You have to be
real
silent.
Angry.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm already angry, and nobody's burned as a witch in my immediate surroundings, so
yeah,
it would be bad.
What if your husband had a wandering eye? Yeah. Or what if he had...
It would be my fault.
Yeah, if he had an affair. Well, it wouldn't be your fault necessarily. It'd be because that hussy bewitched him, right?
Clearly a witch.
It was her fault. Oh, it's not his fault.
Clearly.
It's her fault.
Clearly. It could have, but it could also be my
fault.
Well,
I suppose. I mean... Maybe, but normally it'd be the other woman that was accused. Or if a woman was angry for any reason, or maybe she defended herself, like somebody starts berating you and you stand up for yourself, you would be categorized as defiant, and then you could be blamed for literally anything that goes wrong with any man within the village, or a sick child, or a bad storm. It's all because you could be a witch. And we've seen it.
Oh, God.
Because you acted like a witch. But yeah, the Malleus Maleficarum, completely ridiculous book. It wasn't the only book
either. Really? You think it's ridiculous?
Yeah, I do. And it wasn't the only one, like I said earlier, but it arguably did the most damage.
Yeah.
So how do you think they suggest that you determined whether one accused of witchcraft is actually a witch? obviously torture.
Obviously.
And in certain cases, depending on who was accused and the reasons behind the accusal or whatever, the more severe offenders in the eyes of the court would have to confess to witchcraft in order for the torture to even stop. And then they would have to confess at the stake in order to, quote, receive the favor of being strangled before burning.
Oh, my Jesus.
Yeah.
We're going to kill you, but we'll kill you in a slightly less awful way. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. So you don't have to suffer as long.
Slightly less painful way.
Yeah.
If you confess to something that you're not. Lovely.
Mm. Yeah, correct. I mean, and so then you think about all of these people are getting accused, but what was everyone afraid that they were doing in their spare time when they weren't bewitching someone's husband or eating a baby or something? Well, apparently, in order to make society crumble because of their evilness, they were sleeping with the devil, they were partying with the devil's legions, Friday night into Saturday morning, not Sunday, because that was a holy day, you know.
Yes, of course.
Of course.
They worshipped wicked imagery, they were eating the flesh of unbaptized babies.
Which is why you have to baptize your babies immediately.
Immediately, because otherwise they're going to be eaten by women like us.
Yes.
Eating babies
right.
is my favorite
yes.
thing.
They would play morbid instruments that were made from human and animal bones, and then they were given the mark of the devil after being sprinkled with the putrid water from the toads that they worshipped.
So what does the mark of the devil look like? Because I have psoriasis, and what it looks like, the type of psoriasis that I have, it basically looks like I've been sprinkled with acid, like little droplets of water
yeah.
that cause red marks all over my skin.
Yeah, I don't know what they considered the mark of the devil. They probably could say just about anything they wanted that would have fit their agenda.
Yeah,
at the time.
I think that when my psoriasis is really bad, I think that they would say that I was a devil, like a witch,
maybe
a devil worshiper.
Maybe.
Yeah, but the biggest thing, the biggest concern amongst the common folk was that these evildoers were walking around freely, polluting the very society in which the God-fearing folk lived, and they looked like just anyone else. There was really no way to tell just by looking at them. So anytime anyone who acted a little out of the norm was suspect. But this whole European witch craze is what sociologists would call a moral panic. And it's
oh, yes.
been studied a great deal. And if nothing else, it should serve as a reminder of the damage that can be done when societies are going through great changes and the powers that be are terrified of losing their position of control. And even today, we are not above this nonsense.
Oh, absolutely not.
Yeah,
no.
Humans are susceptible to it. It's happening every day. And the role of the witch is just now being cast onto a different group or groups of people that are being labeled as the other, even if we aren't using the term witch, or as Beatrice said, in some areas, they are still using the term witch, but I think you get my drift.
What I think is fascinating about moral panics, like right now, is that, you know, my husband wrote a piece about the D&D moral panic during
the, D&D
like,
moral
80s.
Panic?
And for those of you who don't know D&D, Dungeons and Dragons, like role-playing games.
Oh, really? There was a moral panic running.
Yeah, because there was a big satanic panic.
Yeah, it was.
I just
that
wanted
time.
To say
panic.
Yeah, yeah, that I know. The
yeah.
satanic. I just wanted to say that actually. That's also very reminiscent of the witch hunts in many ways. Actually, the beliefs.
Yeah.
Surrounding
so
that.
I mean, and it was like rock music as well as like Dungeons and Dragons, and they even formed like a Mothers Against Dungeons and Dragons organization. But you know,
good Lord.
It implies that you know. We're supposedly like a modern / postmodern society. We don't believe in these kind of superstitious things like witches and people casting evil spells. But to have this type of moral panic means that you have to believe that these people are actively like casting spells against you. And for people who are supposedly like Christian, to believe that like the devil and evil spirits are actively like seeking them out and attacking them and their way of life in 20th, 21st century society is a little
wild
out there. Yeah. I thought we'd gotten
yeah.
past that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah we haven't it. Though.
No, we haven't.
And you know, and the people that believe that, I mean, of course you have the rogue people, but I think with the increasing accessibility to internet, you can find anybody who believes what you do with just the click of a button. But also there are some churches that really are on the end of days.
Absolutely.
Oh, really?
And they are massive churches. Yeah. I mean, like hundreds and thousands of people gathering for church, and they're being told that all of these earthquakes
oh, God,
and
yeah.
the fires and all of this increase in violence is clearly a sign of the end times.
And hurricanes.
That's it.
I thought hurricanes were to be blamed on gay people. You know, I thought it was gay people and sexually adventurous women who are to blame for hurricanes. Now it's witches? I'm confused.
Perhaps. But it's the end of the... Well, I don't know about witches, but it's the end of times, okay. Period, regardless.
It's just everything is
fucked. It's not science that can solve this or explain it. No. Not science.
Okay, so... and
nope. Yeah, good times.
And I mean, one of the people who are working very, very... ambitiously towards the end of times is Donald Trump, right? To bring us back to the beginning of the episode. And
yes. So yeah. if you want to cast your binding spell on Donald Trump, the next,
which you should do, yeah.
Hopefully we get this episode out before this, but the next waning crescent moon is October 12th to October 19th. So
exactly.
Good luck, yeah. Ladies.
You know what you need. If you forgot again, then rewind to the beginning of this episode. You need a tarot card. You need a very unflattering photo of Trump, which is easy to find because most of his photos are very unflattering.
But it's got to be a small one. A small.
It's got to be a small one.
Like his hands.
A white candle, an orange candle, yeah. A pin. Very easy. Very easy to do. You know how it works. Get your shit together and do a binding spell on Trump. And don't eat unbaptized babies.
Just eat chocolate.
Yeah, eat chocolate.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
So thank you for listening to this episode. Before we go, I want to give a shout out to a very nice podcast that I came across called Women Transcend. So maybe since you're listening to this podcast, you like feminism, maybe? Maybe you like intelligent women talking about things they know about. maybe you're into this kind of thing. So you should really listen to Women Transcend. You can find it anywhere you listen to podcasts. So check it out. We really like it. And it's also, I mean, a lot of the podcast is very interview based. So it's a lot of interviews with women who tell stories of how they persisted. Which is kind of very fitting, right? So you should really check it out. It's really good. Okay. So you can find us too everywhere you listen to podcasts. You can find us on iTunes. Please, if you listen to us on iTunes, then rate and review us because that's how other people find us. And we all need more nasty in our lives, right?
Yes.
You could also rate us on Facebook, which would also be lovely because we have a Facebook page. We also have a Facebook group where you can discuss all kinds of shit with us. We have a Gmail account, shewhopersistedpodcast@gmail.com. We are on Twitter at shewpersistedpod. We have an Instagram account. What else do we have?
Did you say Twitter?
I said Twitter, shewpersistedpod. Oh. And I think that's it. I think that's all we wanted to tell you. Yeah. So in a few days, a week ideally, that's our plan, we will be back with more on witches. So
thanks for listening, guys.
Thanks.
Until now, stay nasty.
Stay nasty.
Stay nasty.
Bye.